Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hear that podcast growling, mean and angry. Hear that vocal shouting, it's Danger and Jay. It's Danger and Jay.
The presenting sponsor for today's episode of Hear That Podcast Growling is Visa, a network working for everyone. Just like Jay and I are. Jay, what's up?
Oh, I am in a great mood today. I am bookended by 2 days of joy. And
what?
This isn't like a concert at a bowling alley and dinner at Arby's kind of joy. This is joy that you can this is joy that you can appreciate. Survivor is back. That was my joy last night. And tomorrow I get to go to Athens and see my son before hopping over to Pittsburgh. So just in a really good mood right now.
Survivor and OU rank, probably my family doesn't like how close they rank to them and my things that bring me joy. I mean, those you're right. Those two things, man, that they kind of, they're really definers for us, Jay.
They are.
Yeah. great Survivor premiere. I love that the season is going to be new and different and they're shaking it up. Season 41, shout out Jeff Probst for ditching all his old plans and saying, let's start all over again, because it's made it very fun. So for our Survivor folks, usually we save our Survivor talk for the end when everyone starts tuning out, but it's the premiere, so we got to open with it. So if you want more Survivor talk, you just let us know. I anticipate silence and crickets from the fans, but we've got a lot to get to. It is Steelers week. It is Steelers prediction time. Talking a lot about, I mean, huge game this Sunday at Heinz Field. Jay's going to have some sad stats about Heinz Field that I already have been a bit flabbergasted by when he told me before we started. Mark Caboli is here. Hold your booze. It's okay. To talk about the Steelers and the idea that the sky is falling. These two teams sounding more like each other than anyone in Pittsburgh would like when you really start hearing the conversation surrounding them. I will say that much, which is probably should be good news for Bengals fans. But we'll talk to Mark about everything that's going on in a very interesting crossroads of time in Pittsburgh right now. We're going to, of course, have some run passer boots. Bengals growler bet will be back. So if you just want to try to get in and get your delicious 50 West beer, you can just scroll to the end. I don't recommend that. There's a lot of good content before that happens. But we will have our Bengals growler bet where you can try to win fabulous prizes that are drinkable. We'll do our predictions. We're going to talk a little bit about something we mentioned on Tuesday, which is Joe Burrow's comfort in the pocket. And you'll hear from him because I thought his answers were very revealing and interesting on that topic, and lots more. Let's start here, Jay, with the news. And the news is injury centric at this point. And lo and behold, in a shocking turn of events, Big Ben's a little banged up coming into the game. This happens. It feels to me like it happens every single time these two teams play. But, Jay, in your fashion, the way only you can do, you looked it up as you're one to do and say, Paul, that feeling is wrong. It does not happen all the time.
It rarely happens. I think we see it in playoff games and in other big Steeler games, and you think that it just happens in Bengals Steelers game. But Ben has rarely been on the injury report at all for a Bengals Steelers game over the last 10, 12 years. And he's never been questionable or doubtful. He's always been probable with a hand, minor injuries. So I think it's just, it's because he talks about injuries so much. He's got that diva label placed on him.
There you go. Label placed on him by Richard Skinner. Skinny literally called him a diva in the press conference.
And was that Mike Hilton's talk?
Hilton.
It was. You can see a little smirk from Mike, and he kind of dodged it. But yeah, it's not been a case with Ben. And the other thing too, I think a lot of people remember the playoff game where he left on a cart and came back and led him to victory.
A lot of people do remember that, Jay.
Yeah, yes. Well, a lot of people celebrated it by throwing bottles at Ben, which was totally despicable. But
yeah.
Yes, it's not been an ongoing thing in Bengals Steelers games where he's been on the injury report. This is a legit injury. I mean, he's gonna play, but he's gonna be sore. And if the Bengals can continue to get that pass rush and make him sorer, then it will affect. It's his left pec, but he said anytime he reaches for anything or tries to get himself up off the ground, it hurts a lot. And if you're sacking him and knocking him to the ground, and if he's throwing a lot and taking shots there, it's something he's going to have to deal with. And it can help the Bengals defense maybe slow down that Pittsburgh offense that isn't exactly speeding along right now.
Yeah, a lot to get into with how that can affect Ben. And I think the Bengals are better set up to take advantage of that than ever. But to me, this game is not about Ben's injury. If we're going to make it about injuries, it's about T.J. Watt.
Yeah.
T.J. Watt is the one. I mean, if he's out here, he's got a minor groin injury. They have this thing they're dubbing the groin club, which makes me uncomfortable in Pittsburgh because they have four guys with groin injuries. So that's fine. But T.J. Watt is in this club, and there was a thought that it might be serious because he only was able to play 16 snaps last week, and he was dominant in those 16 snaps as he's one to be. And instead, he ends up getting hurt, and the thought was he'd be out for a while, but it looks like he may play this week. He was limited on Wednesday, and we'll see if he's just – they say, you know, he could miss one game, or maybe he could play a little bit. Maybe he won't be his full self on Sunday, which, boy, would the Bengals have dodged a bullet because he is just a killer against them and is just an awful matchup for them in every way, shape, or form when Cam Hayward is still healthy. It's like Akeem Hicks and Khalil Mack on steroids at this point. Not that they're actually on steroids, but their play would be. You just hate that matchup. If he plays, and if he plays like T.J. Watt, it's big trouble. It's just not. But they could dodge that bullet. I think the Bengals have a much more of a real chance in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of refreshing. Tyler Boyd was open and honest. He said they would be lucky if he didn't play. A lot of times players are like, oh, you know, they're still going to be the same, next man up. You can't say that with a guy that's a perennial candidate to be defensive player of the year. And I'm not so sure after talking to Mark, and you'll hear more of this in our conversation, that he is going to play. Mark didn't seem all that optimistic. So we'll see. Mark and I talked after yesterday's practice. We're recording this before the Thursday practices, so we'll wait and see what the injury report looks like. But yeah, that one would be huge. And the other thing is, it's not just him. They have a lot of pass rushers. They have a lot of those guys in that groin club are defensive guys that can really affect the Bengals offense. So it's as huge as losing T.J. Watt would be. There's other ripple effects there too that could really hurt the Steelers defense.
They are so dependent on that pass rush because they are weaker in the secondary than they're used to being. And, you know, it's really that dominant pass rush is what gets them by. And when they didn't have as much of it as guys were falling against the Raiders, what happened? The Raiders put up points. They were able to hit deep ball to Henry Ruggs. They were able to, you know, do all the things to give them that 26-17 victory because that's the game changer. And certainly the Bengals would be the ultimate victim of that when you look at the way their offensive line is constituted. On the Bengals injury side, we'll continue to monitor. You know, Trey Waynes, Zach Taylor said, look, you're going to try to ease him into practice this week. He was just on the side with director of rehab, Nick Cosgray, on Wednesday. Xavier Suofilo and T. Higgins. Xavier has a knee and T. has the shoulder. All did not practice. They're going to try to get them back in at some point this week and hopefully be ready to go on Sunday. I will see. Jackson Carmen obviously would start for Suofilo at right guard. The other thing about that is, and them not practicing Wednesday, it rained and the Bengals were going to move to their indoor facility, but they don't have one. So instead, they went into the stadium and practicing in the rain, trying to get back off a hamstring. Just go do work on the side, I think, is kind of part of that. So indoor facility strikes again. But he could go do work inside. I think they're just trying to work him back. I don't know. I mean, the fact that he wasn't out there at all, even in individual stuff, gives me pause that we're even going to see Trey Waynes on Sunday. But that will be something that we will monitor. If he's unable to give anything in practice on Thursday or even their Friday walkthrough, obviously then. But I think if you don't see him practicing at all Thursday, it's probably not going to happen. So keep an eye on our Twitter machines for that. Or, of course, we'll have updates on that as we go through the week on the site. All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I have a story up on another kind of state of protection, which is sort of really dug into the reality of this empty set discussion that is kind of gotten skewed and taken gotten out of hand a little bit, and some of the pressure stuff and interesting things that Joe Burrow had to say about mobility, which he's going to need to show plenty of in this game against the Steelers. I want to start there because we mentioned in Tuesday's edition of Hear That Podcast Growlin' that, you know, he just doesn't seem to look super comfortable scrambling and being mobile and trying to create those off script plays that we're used to seeing through 2 weeks. I said, well, we'll ask him about it on Wednesday. And I said, I don't really anticipate him saying too much about it. Lo and behold, as Joe's want to do, he was pretty honest about it. Here's Joe Burrow sort of with a number of different questions surrounding the idea of mobility and comfort in the pocket and coming back from that knee, things like that. So here's Joe Burrow.
Through two games, how comfortable do you feel moving around in the pocket, instinctually kind of scrambling out and doing that kind of thing? Or has that kind of been still a process of getting used to that for you?
Yeah, you know, watching the film, that's an area that I can improve. Just, you know, feeling the rush and feeling where I can escape the pocket a little faster. That's definitely an area that I'm continuing to get better at post-injury.
Is it different to kind of feel like, do you feel like you have to think about that a little bit more now as you're, you know, I don't know, whether it's the knee or just worrying about things, or is it not as instinctual as maybe it was last year?
I'm definitely not thinking about it, but I'm definitely going to be in more of a mindset to escape the pocket faster moving forward.
Joe, is that just something that takes game reps, live game reps, not necessarily practice reps to get better at and improve on?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I was, you know, watching the film, there were certainly a few plays where, you know, my first or second read wasn't there, and I moved on quickly, but, you know, just not quickly enough. And I think in those situations, I can get out of pocket and try to make a play.
Joe, what are your thoughts on moving the pocket, actually having the pocket move side to side and take advantage of what that could offer?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of different things that we can do. You know, there's positives and negatives to all of that. And, you know, when you move the pocket, the pocket is cleaner, but you're also taking away one entire side of the field and they know where you're throwing it. So there's positives and negatives to each thing that you can do, and you just got to weigh those options.
Joe, what do you like about – oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Butch.
I was going to say, Joe, what do you like about the empty set And is it different in the pros than it is in college?
It just allows you to really put pressure on the defense, and you know, it's tough for them to cover all parts of the field. And you can get the ball out quickly. You know, there might not be as many big plays in those situations because it's just five-man protection, a lot of one-on-ones up front, but it allows you to get the ball out fast and stay in manageable down in distances.
Joe, one of your strengths, one of your many strengths, was this pocket manipulation, you know, and staying in the pocket and being able to just, you know, slide, step or whatever. How is the pocket manipulation aspect of it coming for you?
You know, I was happy with, you know, I made some throws with guys in my face on Sunday while I was getting hit, and so I was happy with that part of my game. You know, I think through the first part of the game until we started turning the ball over, I thought I was playing really well. I was playing on time and getting the ball out quickly, and then it kind of snowballed on us. But, you know, I was happy with my ability to hang in there and take a hit and complete the ball still.
Where do you feel like your timing and feel is, you know, in the pocket, where it is now compared to where it was, you know, right before the injury? Because it feels like you had made a lot of progression there, and then you obviously had a lot of time off. So where's that at right now for you?
Yeah, I think I felt a lot more comfortable back there on Sunday than I did the week prior. And that's just going to keep getting better and better. So I was really happy with just my comfortability in the pocket on Sunday and hanging in there and making throws, you know, when those opportunities were there.
You know, I always appreciate this. Burrow, he may not love doing media like some people do, but when he does it wholeheartedly and with pretty unfiltered honesty almost across the board. I mean, going back to when we talk about the camp stuff, when he was honest about where he was at there, like, look, I watched the tape. I got to be better at that. I'm not doing that as much, and I've got to go out there and do it. And I think he says it's not I'm thinking about the knee, but I do think there's a mental hurdle to getting back into that idea of, you know, what did we see last year, right? The pressure's coming. He'd like hop over a guy who's on the ground and then skirt out to the outside and do the spin move on somebody near the sideline while everyone's telling him to throw it away. I mean, that was Burrow, and him saying he's just, you know, he hasn't been really at that point yet is a pretty interesting admission this week of all weeks.
Yeah, I mean, the play that stands out from last year is that game in Philadelphia where he extended it forever and Zach's screaming at him to throw it away. And then he finally, right before he goes out of bounds, throws it downfield for a completion and just kind of laughs at Zach like, ah, told you I could do it. That's not back. That confidence to do that kind of thing isn't back yet. It doesn't mean it's gone forever. It's something he's got to work through, but it makes sense that even if he's not thinking about the knee, it has to be in the back of his head, and you're getting hit. And it's just something that I think we will see more of as the year goes along. But he talked too about, you know, when you roll out of the pocket like that, you take half the field away. He likes, and you wrote about this in your story, he really likes the empty set. That's why it's not going anywhere. As much as he's taking the hits and the sacks, he likes it. And Zach and Brian like it. And it's here to stay. I think that they can do more once he gets more comfortable with it to get outside the pocket, make some sprint runs, even if it takes half the field away. I mean, how often is he going through all five progressions in empty? Yeah, I mean, you've got to get that ball out quick. You're only going to two, maybe three of your progressions anyhow. So if you have those guys on that side of the field, even though you're taking half of it away, you've still got the same number of options. So it'll be interesting to see what he does in Pittsburgh. I would imagine it'll be more of a, you know, an October type of thing when we start seeing the total comfort come back and we start seeing more of him getting outside the pocket.
I would agree. And that's just something that's going to be a process that's going to come with time. And you mentioned empty. A few numbers that when I really looked at how much the Bengals use empty versus everybody else across the league, fifth most dropbacks in empty. How about the Bills against the Steelers in the opener? We drop back in empty 22 times. The Bengals have done it 19 in two games. And you thought the Bengals have been doing it a lot in one game against the Steelers 22 times. The Steelers had 24 PFF pressures in one game against Josh Allen, who was basically just taking he wasn't taking on hits as much. He did take hits. He got sacked and took hits. But he's a different quarterback. It goes into that mobility thing. Like Josh Allen running is different than Joe Burrow running. He's much more of an athlete, of a scrambler, you know, a big, fast, strong type guy. Burrow is more of a processor and things of that nature, and kind of has the pocket presence, the wiggle in the pocket. I mean, Allen's just running for his life. Like every play, he was just drop back running for his life, and that's the reason the Bills lost that game, amongst other things. I mean, living in empty against the Steelers can be tough. I anticipate the Bengals doing it, you know? I mean, because obviously it was a big part of their game plan against Chicago, and I think they felt they might have found something with it and learned from it. And that's what Burrow said. You know, I think the one thing we've learned is that Jamar and T can really blow by people when they start to squat even a little bit, and we can really take advantage of that. And I, as much as people are yelling, how did you not know that? It's easy to say that in hindsight, as the game is going by and you're just trying to keep your guy clean, you try to take shots here and there. But I think having that more in their back of their head to do that more often, to keep people off balanced in the empty, in particular with this current setup, can be something they can take advantage of. And that's kind of what Burrow said. It's something their takeaways right now that's how they're going to keep people from just sitting on this, and they can use this more effectively.
Yeah. And if they don't go down 20-3 against the Bears, maybe they don't feel that way right now, because that was kind of a necessity is the mother of invention type thing, where they're down 17 late in the game. They've got to take the two deep shots he took to Chase were late in the game, the one that he sailed way out of bounds, and then the one that for the touchdown. And he did take a deep shot to T earlier in the game. But yeah, I think people see that comeback maybe as kind of meaningless. But if anything comes out of it, it's that they can throw deep out of empty, and that these guys can beat corners squatting on routes, and they can hit the pass down the field. That wasn't a great pass from Burrow, the touchdown, and Chase made the adjustment and made the score. And the Steelers secondary, you mentioned it. Minka Fitzpatrick has not looked the same. Ruggs hit them for that deep ball last week. I think there are plays to be made down the field, and they can come out of empty this week.
Yeah. Well, another thing they do out of empty, and you keep an eye on this, the Chase deep ball, they bring one of those guys in and chip off and help out inside. So it's empty protection, mm-hmm. quote unquote, but they're bringing one of those guys in. They're just lined up outside at first as a way to keep the defense off balance, but you still are giving a little bit of extra help. And that's how, if you know you're going to be taking that shot, it's a way to offset it and keep the defense thinking differently. So, you know, keep an eye out for more stuff like that against the Steelers as they try to find the opportunities. Because here's the thing, the way this game is going to go, if the Bengals are going to have any shot, and we have, God, how many times we see them feel like they have a way that they can win, and it just turns into a house of horrors in like the first 5 minutes up there. But this is a game for the defense. This defense that is number two in DVOA against the rush through two games, number seven overall in DVOA, Football Outsiders, which is a really good metric to get true value of how a unit's playing. It's early in the year, so those things can change pretty dramatically. But you know, the Steelers bemoaned all offseason they can't run the ball, and that's why they drafted Najee Harris in the first round and all this stuff, and they have to be able to run the ball better. They got to take pressure off of Ben having to do all the quick stuff and you know, not be able to throw it deep like he could in the past and all the other stuff. Bengals defense has stuffed the run against two of the best rushers in football and can very easily force Ben to beat them and have a pass rush now that can go do it. This is a game that they can win with the defense holding the trophy up at the end. You know, this is a defense game. As much as we want to make it about the pass rush of the Steelers and we always want to talk about offense, the strength of this team, whether anybody wants to hear this or not, is absolutely this defense right now. And that's their hope of throwing this team on their back. If they're going to do something like that, that's what it's got to look like.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like another game like last week where first 1-20 probably wins. It's going to be low scoring, grinded out, both teams with O-line issues. Steelers are going to try to run the ball, even though they haven't been able to do it yet. And you can see that this defense, that they gave up the a little more yardage overall to Minnesota, a little more points, but they are on pace to have one of their best starts as far as a run defense goes. And that's something this team's been lacking for a while. And it, Najee Harris, 26 carries, 83 yards to start. That they are really scuffling to get that run game going. And if you can affect Ben and you can stop the run, you absolutely can. This can look like that game in what was it, 2012, when they clinched the playoff berth. And I don't think they had an offensive touchdown in that game. They won 13-10 and they had a Leon Hall pick six. And that's how they win. And that's when they win in Pittsburgh. That's how those games are. They are low scoring and the defense carries the offense.
Absolutely. They don't score at Heinz Field, Jay, do they?
They do not.
Do you have some stats about this?
I do. It's sad. It really is sad. So since 2007, so 14 years, last 14 games at Heinz Field, the Bengals have not topped 20 points.
Oh, my God.
10, 10, 18, 7, 7, 13, 20, 17, 16, 16, 14, 13, 3. Those are their point totals at Heinz Field.
There were some good offensive teams in there. I mean, there were the last 14 years. There's some very good offensive teams in there.
That 11-15 was good. The 9 team was good offensively. Those 174 points in the last 14 games, that comes out to 12.4, which is just brutal. But I was wondering, well, league-wide, where would that rank? So I looked at all teams at all stadiums since 2007, and it's not the worst.
It's not?
It's close, but it is not the worst. It's
Who is worse?
Well, and also, this is a minimum of 4 games played, because, okay, you have the NFC, AFC, where that you could lose a game 27-3, and then your average is 3. The Texans are averaging 11.5 games at Baltimore. The Seahawks are averaging 11.5 at Green Bay. The Broncos are averaging 12 on the nose at Buffalo. And the Rams averaging 12.3 at Old Candlestick. These are by specific stadium. So
Old Candlestick making an appearance. Wow.
And then you have the Bengals.
Wow. Well, so throwing Old Candlestick out, because you've got the games at Levi's, which I guarantee that number has gone up since the Rams have been playing the 49ers with McVay. This is clearly the lowest amongst division rivalry.
Yeah, those first ones I mentioned, they played 4-4-4. The Rams played 7 games at Candlestick. The Bengals have a 14 game sample in there. Yeah. That's saying something. And maybe one of the more surprising things on this list was Paul Brown Stadium stands as a house of horrors for one team. That they were 12th on the list. The Titans are only averaging 14.3 points per game at Paul Brown Stadium over the last 4.
Oh, the Titans hate coming up north.
They do.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, it's incredible. And here's the thing about that list, which is tells you all you need to know, because it's not that the Bengals haven't won there, but the way they've had to win is with the defense every time. And that's fine. Here's I got Jay, we're back where I'm like trying to match you here. I got stats, and these are not hard stats. My stats are easier, because I'm not going to go deep into spreadsheet and filter search world too much. But you know how many times the Bengals have won the first matchup? Throw Hines out. Just the first matchup of the two during the season against the Steelers, going back to really Marv era, but 2000. They have won the first matchup against the Steelers 5 times, going back to 2000, which is not good. But we all knew that. I mean, they just broke their long streak on Monday Night Football at the end of last year. So those 5 times, common thread between all of them: 4 division championships, and then the 2006 year, where you could argue they should have been if it wasn't for an insane meltdown at the end of the season, partially at the hand of the Steelers at the end, but all playoffs, except for 06, where again they should have been in the playoffs. I mean, all winning seasons. This is such a barometer game every single year. If you're ever going to be good, if it's such a springboard, has always been that way as the sign that the Bengals have a good team. Now, partially is because the Steelers have always had a good team, particularly early in the season before injuries maybe have set in for them. And that's fine, but this is always a barometer. It's always going to be that. And when they have beaten them, they've won division championships. Like, that's the level that they've had to be at. That's why it's hard for me to see them winning this one necessarily, because that's not who the Bengals have this year. But the Steelers are different. It's just what it can mean. I don't care what anybody says about one week, division game, whatever. It means more. It means more for this team in particular, this time of year, what it has meant historically, organizationally. It's just such a massive game in that respect.
It is. And the fact that it would be on the road, I think it makes it even more important that you can start the season 2-1. You're 1-0 in the division. You won at Pittsburgh, where you typically don't win. I would be interesting to look and see. Everybody always talks about 2-0 starts, 64% chance you make the playoff. Like, 1-1 feels like that really, it's almost like in an NBA playoff series. Like, game three is the key. When it's 1-1, game three is that key. Because you go 2-1 and all of a sudden you can really kind of take off. You go 1-2 and things can go south in a hurry. So it is from all those, from structurally the way the schedule is to the fact that it's the Steelers, huge game Sunday. That's, if, and maybe not a total spiral out of control if they lose, but if they win, it can really be a propulsion with the Jags coming up, the Lions. I mean, they could, this, I talked about this with Joe Daneman on the pregame hits we did before the game in Chicago, where if they go to Pittsburgh and win, it doesn't matter what they did in Chicago, it'll be forgotten. And that's going to be the case a lot of times. You beat the Steelers and it wipes out a lot of other things. Look how thrilled people were last year when they beat them on Monday Night Football, and you forget about how bad things were before that game.
Absolutely. And you wonder, you know, how much that will be a part of this game on Sunday. How much Von Bell and the defense, again, it's going to be a defense game. Are they going to build on that? Are they going to go in there with what the Bengals rarely seem to go in there with, that confidence that they're going to win, because they so rarely have, because of what happened on Monday Night Football, because of the attitude they have, because they have Mike Hilton partially, you know, and that's what Hilton said when was asked about, you know, what you have to go win in Pittsburgh. You have to have that confidence that you can go. You go, if you don't have that, you're not. You're just not. If you have that, any doubt, you're not. And Bengals teams that we're talking about that have won division championships and won that first game, 05, 09, 13, 15, they had that no doubt, you know, that they're going to go in there and win. And some years, I'm not saying that they didn't have that, but certainly in recent history, they have not had any real, there's no way that you could go in as they went. I'll just do it just for effect. L L L W L L L L L L L L L L L against the Steelers. There's no way that you could say they're going in there like, I'll definitely get in the W today. You know, but I do think because of what happened at the end of last year and because of the way the defense is playing, that they do feel confidence going in here. And that is really important in this rivalry without any question.
Another piece too. It's a different year, but one of Burrow's strengths, and you wrote about this last year about how he learns thing and processes them and keeps them in the back of his mind for later. And you saw how his second game against Cleveland, throws for 3 touchdowns, 406 yards. This is really only the second time he's had a rematch game. He didn't get to play that second game against the Steelers. He didn't get to play the second game against the Ravens last year. And again, it is a different team, but it's so early in the year. That game was the game last year was around midseason, right before he got hurt. It feels like he is a key element to this too. And you just look at his career in college, you know, the first year at LSU, good, not great. Then he comes back, processes everything he's learned, and he goes on and has this record-breaking year. I think that is a key piece of this, is him getting that rematch, that second shot at the Steelers.
Who have been a little bit different, you know, not as blitz happy as they were last year to this point, but and that doesn't mean that wouldn't come out and change and go back to what they felt like they were able to do to Burrow last year, because you still got most of the same pieces there. So we'll see how that works. But ideally for them, they don't feel like they need to blitz, because they can just beat the Bengals up front and get in Burrow's face in the same way that the Bears and the Vikings did too. And that being the key for them is drop guys back in coverage, let your four get home and you know, wash your hands off and call it a day. All right, let's just take a quick break. Let's get a better look, though, at Pittsburgh, as we really dive into this. And Jay, you did by talking to everybody's favorite friend, whip around whipping boy. Our guy in Pittsburgh, though, who does a fantastic job, and people only don't like it because he's got the truth. And he's not afraid to kind of say how he feels about the Bengals, which has proven correct mostly in the last 5 years. Here's your interview with Mark Caboli.
Mark, how are things in Pittsburgh today?
Oh, quite warm and quite sunny. But other than that, much of the same old stuff. I'm just really, really happy to be on here, to be able to talk to some of my Bengals fans. So I know they really like me.
Yes, they love you. They're eagerly awaiting your what do you want to say, beat down of the Bengals.
I put it this way. I did the whip around this coming out Friday, and they're probably going to yell at me. So I'm just not going to look at the comments.
Yeah. When I predicted the Steelers to go 6-11, I avoided the comments there. I almost wonder if I should check in under an assumed name when I come to Pittsburgh this weekend.
I think you're okay. You're okay for now.
Or I was going to say, are they agreeing with me now? It seems like a little bit of a sky is falling situation in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, you know, they were winning the Super Bowl last week after they beat Buffalo, and now they're not going to win another game. Ben should be benched, and he should have retired, and Tomlin needs to go, and Najee Harris was a terrible pick, and so on and so forth. The sky is falling. I mean, put it this way, they played two pretty good teams. Maybe the best team in the AFC, second best team in the AFC, and the Bills, and won. And a team that looks like the Raiders are pretty decent too. And it was a one possession game late, even though they struggled in that game offensively. So you can look at it that way. People in Pittsburgh tend not to. They tend to look at the negative. But they beat. I mean, for the Steelers fans, it's a no win situation. They should beat the Bengals. They should whip the Bengals at home and just look to next week to Green Bay. Of course, that's not how things work, but that's how the mentality is. So if they win 14-10, that's not going to be good enough here. It's going to be that we still stake.
Well, is that the case? Even, I mean, there are a lot of key players hurt. We'll get to Ben and TJ Watt a little bit later, but you know, that long list of injuries that they have, who besides the big two do you see as potentially being the most important or the most impactful Sunday against the Bengals?
Well, Deontay Johnson did not practice Wednesday at all, which was expected. And, you know, how he tweaked that knee late in the game, I don't know. I find it hard to believe that he's going to play this week, and he is their best receiver. He's one of the league leaders in receptions, and he's able to do a little bit of everything. So I think that's, I wouldn't say bank it, but that's a significant loss for them, even though they have James Washington, who's been around and could still play. I mean, Washington doesn't have the same personality, the same traits as Deontay, who can do a little bit of everything. That's going to hurt a little bit. It looks like Devin Bush might be back. He is full participant in practice on Wednesday. Joe Hayden has yet to practice, which is normal for a Wednesday for him, but not normal for coming off a groin injury he suffered at Friday's practice. I think that's a big one, because all of a sudden your secondary is very, very thin. And when you have three wideouts like the Bengals have, that can become an issue right there as well. All of a sudden you're going with Cam Sutton, James Pierre, Trey Norwood and Justin Lane, and you probably, your listeners were probably saying, who? That's basically what it is. So those two I'm a little skeptical on, but Hayden and Johnson will be big losses if they don't play.
And then TJ Watt, of course. I mean, everybody says next man up. That doesn't really apply with a player of his caliber. What, when he went down, did they do anything different? Was the scheme a little more basic, a little less aggressive, or did
you know what? They had to do something different. He was limited in practice on Wednesday. And when I mean by limited, I probably did as much as him, but I'm not allowed to say that, so nobody repeat that. So who knows how it's going to play out here in the next couple of days. But, yeah, I mean, when you have that guy, a guy like TJ Watt's ability to put pressure on a guy, a quarterback, and you saw what he did in Buffalo, you saw what he did the last 3 years, all of a sudden, you know, there was a three-headed monster they were so proud of during all preseason in that first game with Melvin Ingram, Watt, and Alex Highsmith was a rookie last year, being able to rotate those guys in, and all of a sudden you go down to two, and Highsmith hurts his groin too. Then all of a sudden you're putting a guy like Jameer Jones in there. And he was a first year guy that, you know, didn't even make it 2 days in like the Houston camp last year. So, but he had a good preseason. So all of a sudden that tends to complicate things of what you want to do. Then you have Devin Bush out. That complicates things even more. All of a sudden Minkah Fitzpatrick has to play a position where they like where he's at, more of a box safety, more of a freelancer, maybe not as much as Polamalu, but back in the day, but something like that. He's overextending himself. He allows 61-yard touchdowns. So it was just the biggest issue with Watt was, I think, that they weren't able to get the pressure with four people, which they did against the Buffalo so easily. And you're not able to do that when you don't have TJ Watt in there. So I think that's the big key right now. If Highsmith's able to go fully, okay, but you're still going to have to rely on a third guy, and it's probably going to be a young guy that named Jameer Jones if Watt can't go, and, you know, he has like five snaps in his career.
Well, I mean, this O-line for the Bengals is having trouble protecting Joe Burrow, so this could be his breakout game.
Oh, trust me, the Steelers fans do not want to hear about your offensive line woes because they got plenty of theirs.
Well, with Ben, obviously it's a peck. It's his left peck, so I don't know there's that much of a issue there. And plus, he tends to show up on injury reports a lot and still play. I'm more than the wound, I'm curious about his words. He came out after the game and just every answer to every question was, "I got to play better. I got to play better." Was he biting his tongue so he didn't criticize anybody? Did he truly believe he needs to play better, or was it just something in between there?
Well, first of all, he will play. It said that he's just going to have to deal with some pain. Well, what happened was he got clobbered 10 times against the Raiders, and it was just a contusion, but it's probably pretty sore. So that's he'll still play. But, you know, he followed that up on Wednesday here with a lot of the same, maybe not as dramatic of "it was my fault, I have to get better." It was a little bit more of "we need to get better" in there. I don't think there's any issue there. I think the biggest issue is they don't know what they want to do on offense yet. They don't know what works yet. You got so many things with new offensive coordinator Matt Canada. He has to protect so many different aspects of the offense. I think it's really hindering. When I talk about that is, I mean, he doesn't want a pass pro, traditional pass pro a lot, because he's going to expose the tackles and the young offensive line and the struggling offensive line. He doesn't want to, you know, do certain types of stuff to where Roethlisberger has to move out of the pocket, which typically is a Matt Canada offense with pre-snap motions, jet sweeps, stuff like that, trying to help those guys out a little bit, trying to get a new tight end acclimated to the system, all while wanting to run the ball. They want to run the ball. They want to run the ball. They ran the ball like 15 times last week. They're 32nd in the league again in rushing. They're like 31st in attempts. So you put all those things together, and I don't think they really found the groove of how this offense best works. So I think Roethlisberger's getting a little bit frustrated because he's probably thinking, you know, just give me the ball and I'll throw it around the field like I did last year, and we can win some games. And they're like, no, let's hold off on that right now. Let's stick to the plan. So I don't think there's any fighting, but there's a little frustration.
I mean, the rookie first round pick, 26 carries, 83 yards for Harris. Is he kind of finding his footing still in the at this level? Is it the O-line's fault? Little of both
it's
there?
It's the O-line's fault.
Yeah, it always
it's
is.
It's definitely the O-line's fault. They don't block many people whatsoever. The issue with the offensive line is they're just so inexperienced. Four new guys from last year. The fifth guy, right tackle, was their worst offensive lineman last year and wouldn't be playing if the guy they signed a $10 million contract, Zach Banner, didn't tear his knee up last September. And he's not ready yet, so he would be in there, or they would basically have five different guys in there this year, which, you know, I'll be honest with you, what, one, two, three, four of them barely played in the NFL. The only one who's played was Trey Turner, and they didn't have much offseason together as well because they all were banged up or something help there. So they're struggling. They don't know what to do right now with that offense. I mean, Najee is getting acclimated to the NFL speed, and that's, you can see, you know, he has to learn how not to make the 4-yard gain and try to make it a 20-yard game, because in the NFL that doesn't work. That usually results in a 2-yard loss because the guys are so fast. So I think he's getting used to that. You can see the talent with him, tons of talent. He just doesn't have anywhere to go. And by the time, they were down in the second half the past two games and basically abandoned the run. And what else are you going to do? It's not working. So I think the line plays better. Well, they can't play worse, I don't think. And I think he has a chance. There's a chance they're going to try to get him going this week and try to feature him a little bit more and not try to get away from the run. So I would anticipate that if I'm the Bengals. At least early in that game of heavy doses of Najee.
You know, I went back and looked, and since the turn of the century, the Bengals only have two-game winning streaks against the Steelers, which may not surprise a lot of people that have watched Bengals-Steelers games over the last two decades. But, you know, if they could get one Sunday, that would be a third, because they're coming off that Monday night win and week 14 or 15 last year. Bengals fans and even people in the Bengals organization kind of saw that as a statement game, kind of a tide is turning type of thing. I'm wondering how people in Pittsburgh viewed that. Was it kind of putting them on notice that the Bengals are coming up, or was it just a blip in the middle of a late season collapse?
First, I got to ask you, was 89 one of those seasons they won two in a row? Because I know they beat them like 42-10 week two. I don't remember what happened after that. Is it 89?
Well, I only went, I think it only goes back to 2000.
I think 89 might have been it. But okay, I talk about the Bengals. No, I think, you know, after that game, I thought the whole thought was Ben Roethlisberger's done. He needs to retire, get him out of there. I can't believe we lost to the Bengals on Monday Night Football. How embarrassing is that? I don't think much thought at the time was that, the Bengals are something, a team to reckon with. Now, over the offseason, I think a lot of people saw what they did in the draft, some what they did in free agency, and say, you know what, the Bengal team might be pretty decent in a couple years here because they got the quarterback, they got the receivers, and seems like it got a lot of things in place. But at the time, they were like, forget about it. They were more worried about how in the world are we potentially going to miss the playoffs after starting 11-0, and we have to go and now beat the Indianapolis Colts the next week just to get in as a wild card team. So that's what they're more concerned about. But I think there is a little bit more respect for the Bengals now than there was obviously in years past, because they saw, I think mostly it has to do with the quarterback. I think a lot of people really, really believe that Burrow is the legit real deal, and that scares people. So I still don't think a lot of people think that time is now, but at least in Pittsburgh, but I think they believe that time could be coming.
Yeah. I mean, it was Ryan Finley that of all people that led that win. So that is definitely a jump to Joe Burrow. I want to ask you one last one here. You know, we spend all of the summer training camp writing about, talking about what the team you cover is going to look like, what it's going to do. And then you come out and there's always surprises the first couple weeks. I'm wondering, whether it be positive or a negative surprise, is there something that's kind of caught you off guard with what the Steelers have done or not been able to do in the first 2 weeks?
you know, I don't think anybody thought the offensive line would be this bad. We knew that they were going to be an issue, but this bad, no. I don't think that's one case right there. And a lot of people believe that Najee Harris would be able to make up for some of those shortcomings on the offensive line. And through the first 2 weeks, we haven't really seen that whatsoever. Surprisingly, on the other side, and even though it's not a national narrative at all, it's still the opposite. Roethlisberger's arm is 100%, man. I mean, you don't throw the ball eight times down the field like he did against the Raiders. Two of them were 50 yards on the line on the button. A couple other ones hit guys and they dropped it. So I think the how his arm has rebounded after a year of struggling where it wasn't that good, I think that's a little bit of a surprise. On the other side, I think Stephon Tuitt, a great defensive lineman, 10, 11 sacks last year. His he had surgery. I don't know. It's a really sad story with his brother getting hit by a car and getting killed right before training camp. So it was a really sad story. Then he had a late start and hurt his knee, and he's been put on IR. He's a big loss right there. But, you know, Minkah Fitzpatrick hasn't been playing extremely well in those first two games. They've been asking him to do a lot more than playing deep safety, which he normally does. And, you know, he's a guy who's two-time All-Pro, couple-time Pro Bowler as well. But that's a couple surprises there right now, other than maybe Chase Claypool needs to learn how to catch the ball a little bit better. But I think we were expecting that, too, a little bit by what we saw in training camp. So,
wow, a guy named Chase can't catch the ball and an offensive line can't block. It's like, are we talking about the Steelers or are we talking about the Bengals? There's some weird parallels going on. Well, hey, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. Look forward to seeing you in the press box on Sunday, and we'll see how this one shakes out. Somebody's going to be very unhappy to be 1-2.
Yeah, let's hope it's the Steelers, right?
You said
it's always better. It's always better for business, right?
You're right.
It's better for business if we lose. If we lose, as in the team we cover, like people a lot of times think that we care who wins or loses. Nah. If it affects my job, is what I care. And a loss would be much more entertaining than me. But I'm hoping no Pittsburgh people hear this, but that's how I feel.
Well, I can tell you from firsthand experience that a lot of losing doesn't necessarily mean good for business. fans have a tendency to check out. Though. Yeah, right. I know.
You're 25 years. Hey, at least you guys have went to the Super Bowl once or twice over the past 40 years. Imagine being the Browns. Oh, no, I just like. Now I'm just getting going to comments about from Browns fans.
Oh,
now.
Yeah. You're just going to piss off everybody. Well, hey, thanks again for joining us, Mark. Really good talking to you and look forward to seeing you Sunday.
All right, Jay. Take it easy, my man.
Boo. Boo. Just doing that for people that are just doing that in their car or on the treadmill as they're listening to this right now. I like Mark a lot, so I don't actually want to boo him, but I know Bengals fans do.
He doesn't read the comments. A lot of people say they don't. He truly doesn't. He mentioned that. So you can come at him all you want in the comments of the whip around. He's not going to see it.
I have this visual of Mark, like sitting in an airport with like the big head noise canceling headphones on and like just five people just booing him. And he's just sitting there with a smile on his face, not even just totally oblivious to people like getting that. It's like, that's kind of how he just feels like he's going through it. Like just listening to my thing, doing my thing. Any takeaway that stood out to you in that conversation that maybe you were surprised by?
I guess not really surprised, but he doesn't think we're going to see TJ Watt. Now it's early in the week, but he said he did hardly anything Wednesday. The groins are kind of like hamstrings where they're hard to predict. And it would, as Tyler Boyd said, they would be very lucky not to catch him. But it was, you knew the O-line was going to be an issue this year, but Mark is really down on them that they have been bad, and it's four newcomers. And then the fifth guy, as he said, is their worst guy from last year. So a parallel there where struggles with the offensive line and another reason to think that this is going to be a defensive low scoring game.
I mean, look at it. Everybody was all thinking, well, maybe we had the Steelers wrong after they beat the Bills in Buffalo. Mm. But how did they win that game? Defense and special teams. Their offense didn't do anything in that game of real note. They still can't run the ball. And then what happened against the Raiders? Their offense couldn't do anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, that has been consistent. They still have done nothing offensively through two games. And now you have a Bengals defense that's feeling great coming in and has done a good job of holding down teams with maybe their best example of that against Chicago. Now, granted, it was against Justin Fields in his debut, and he made mistakes. This is Ben Roethlisberger in year 89, and he's not going to make as many mistakes, and he's going to see things that Fields didn't see. But, you know, you can tell. Anybody with eyes can see the difference in this Bengals defense this year. And I think it's real to think that they can hold them down to 14 or 16 or whatever or less. I think that's real. When you look at who Pittsburgh has been, the line troubles that they're having, it's the same way they can take advantage that they took advantage of Minnesota and of Chicago.
And you have Evan McPherson. The ultimate weapon in a close game. And that is a house of horrors, not for Bengals kickers, for all kickers. That's a tough place to kick. But everything we've seen from Evan McPherson, that's not going to bother him. So if it does play out that way, now it's not like Pittsburgh doesn't have a kicker. Chris Boswell has been, I think he's only missed one kick in his career against the Bengals all these years. And he kicked a 56-yarder last week, the longest field goal ever kicked at Hines. But yeah, there's, The Bengals special teams hasn't been great this year outside of Evan McPherson, but Darius Phillips is second in the league in punt return average. And we know what Brandon Wilson is. He's had trouble getting going, but defense special teams, you feel like that can carry the team this week. And then if you just get that little bit of stair step ascension with Joe Burrow getting more and more comfortable on the knee, I absolutely think they can win this game. I don't know if I'm going to pick them yet. We're about to do that in a little bit.
Oh, you're still on the fence? You're on the fence?
I am.
Wow. Okay. Can the Bengals not, like, fumble a kickoff in the first quarter or drop a punt? It happens every time. It's like every time one of these games that you think they have a chance in, they end up losing 36-7 or something like that. It's always, wow, it was that special teams turnover or something. It's like we hear that. You just go back to it over and over. You know, they have a punt return for a touchdown, and Kevin Huber doesn't like remember that, you know, or something like that happens. Yet, when the Bengals have had some wins up there in big games, 09, right? Bernard Scott with a long kick. I mean, it's always so much a part of these games when these two teams are constituted like this. They're much more similar than anybody in Pittsburgh wants to think. They really are. They really are. And we'll see how different that is. I mean, the aura of the Steelers and all that, how much that still exists. But you can win the game the same way that the Steelers typically have those games up there. Run pass or boot. I got to run pass or boot, Jay.
Okay.
So if you're at home, you want to get some good friendly wagers going for Sunday's game. Here's a run pass or boot number. What will be the higher number on Sunday? Steelers sacks. Total personal foul penalties. So your tauntings, your unnecessary roughness, your roughing the passers, and or Mixon runs of 8 or more. So will the Bengals be able to get the running game going a little bit? Joe with only one run of 8 or more last week. Or will the Steelers just punish Burrow with a bunch of sacks, or will this just be one of those games where the teams hate each other and there's a lot too much talk and too many dumb penalties and those rack up? I think this is a good one. I'm proud of this one. I feel like any three could be, you make a good argument for.
Well, actually, I'm going to boot the personal foul penalties. It seems the history of this rivalry just kind of lingers from the mid last decade, the Von Tez Burfict era in the 2014, 15, 16. It seems to have settled down in that regard. And with the taunting penalties being a point of emphasis this year, I think everyone's going to be on their P's and Q's there. It's going to be hard to trash talk in this game And a lot of that sometimes leads to frustration and those kind of penalties. So I'm going to boot that one right off the jump. This other one is really tough because the Bengals have showed a commitment to sticking to the run. And we've talked for the last 45 minutes or whatever, whatever it's been, that this is going to be a low scoring, grinded out game. That's a perfect kind of game for Mixon. I think I'm going to run with Mixon 8+ yards carries, and then I'll pass on the Steelers sacks. I think they're going to get to them. I don't think it's going to be like we've seen some of these past games up in the 7-8 range. So I'm going to go that. I'm going to run with the Mixon 8+, pass on the Steelers sacks, and just boot the personal fouls. I don't think we're going to see a lot of those.
Running with sacks.
All right.
5. Passing on personal fouls, 4.
Ooh.
Booting Mixon runs, 3. I think Pittsburgh's going to bottle Joe up. Not a lot, but enough where they don't let him get out too much. You know, I mean, 3 8+ run, they'll take. I think the Bengals would probably take that, especially if one of them's like 30. You can get up to near 100 pretty quickly doing stuff like that. I think they're going to bottle him up okay. So that's my thing. But it's hard to tell. The Bengals line has not really. I mean, they at the end against Minnesota, they were able to get it going. And that was nice. I mean, that was not. He ran for a lot of yards, but I in Pittsburgh, it feels like a different animal. I don't know if they're going to be able to get him loose, but we shall see. I mean, if this might decide the game,
yeah.
That conversation about Mixon and the sacks. I mean, that's if Mixon is higher than sacks, do the Bengals win? I think so.
Good chance of it.
I mean, that means if they either kept Joe clean or got Mixon going, one of the two. If one of those two happens, yeah, you like their chances. But it's an influential, important run passer boot, not just the fluffy garbage we normally do. We're getting hard hitting here. This isn't just your normal fluff garbage. All right, Bengals growler bet. Here we go. It's time. So no winners yet. After seeing everybody show up and take that delicious 50 West beer off the shelves on us at the opening event down there, which, by the way, Home Sweet Home is out. Like, it's so good. If you like fall beers, if you're into their, I stand by Home Sweet Home. And I'm not just saying that because I love everything they do. I think it's legit, like, the best fall beer. The fall weather showed up. Go get you some Home Sweet Home. But after giving all the way, we're not going to let it be easy. We're just not. Those days are over, okay? Giving away stuff to every Tom, Dick, and Harry, okay? We're here to try to make it harder. I think this is harder. It probably should be harder. It doesn't have a decimal point, unfortunately. I like ones with decimal points. That said, you got to send your answer to me, pdaner@theathletic.com, by email with growler in the subject header. Make sure the word growler is in the subject header, or just send it on Twitter with a #BengalsGrowlerBet, #BengalsGrowlerBet with your answer. Do it before 1 o'clock on Sunday and you'll be entered. If you hit it on the nose, you win some delicious 50 West beer on us. All right. Ben Roethlisberger passing yards. That's it. Ben Roethlisberger passing yards. Are we going to get, oh, my pack hurts and I couldn't throw it there very good? Or are we going to get, oh, my pack hurts, whoosh, 390, right? Like, that's what Bengals fans are mentally prepared for that. Bengals fans are mentally prepared for, like, Ben Roethlisberger complains about injury, Ben Roethlisberger throws for 390 yards. I think that's the case. But it could be, heck, he could go out. He could be like, I tried, I got hit once, it didn't feel right, Haskins. This is not Pittsburgh passing yards. This is Ben Roethlisberger passing yards. Is your Bengals growler bet for this week? What are you saying, Jay?
Yeah, the number I'm picking is more affected by the Bengals defense than whatever Ben's dealing with was with his pack. But I'm going to go deuces wild. 222.
Yes. I had 242 written down.
Oh,
Yeah. 2-4-2 I don't think the Steelers are going to be able to run it very well. I do think it's going to come down to Ben's arm. And so I think you're going to see him throw it a decent amount. So I think 242, you know, up and that's probably low considering how much he'll probably throw it, but I think they'll bottle him up okay. So I think oh, did we make it too easy, Jay?
Well, it might be easy in terms of volume. If we get a lot of submissions, someone's probably going to hit it. But for the individual person, I mean, you're basically picking a number between 150 and 350. That's hard. That's a 0.5% chance of getting it right.
Oh man, I don't like it. Feels risky. Feels risky. All right, let's go prediction time, and we'll get out of here. Jay's on the fence, so I don't want to sway you. Although you probably know my pick, I think I've showed my hand. I don't want to sway you. So I'll let you go ahead and make your decision first.
Yeah, see, we do these things at The Athletic where we pick all the games on, I think it's Monday, or it has to be in by Tuesday morning, and I picked Pittsburgh. We don't pick score or anything like that. You just pick winners. So I'm on record already as saying Steelers. So that's one of the reasons it's like I'm kind of convincing myself that the Bengals can and will win this game, but do I want to be that person that fills out 100 March Madness brackets? I mean, you can't just cover all your bases, so I'm going to stick with my Steelers pick. I'm going to say 16-14 Pittsburgh.
I have the Steelers as well. And if I could have picked them to win 17-12.4, I would have. I'll say 17-13 Steelers over the Bengals, with the Bengals defense coming out feeling like they did good things and more frustration over not being able to keep Burrow clean. Honestly, and I hate to say this, if Burrow comes out of this thing healthy, like, I think it's a win.
Yeah. Well, funny you say that, because the Bengals record for most sacks allowed through the first three games of a season is in play. That record is 16, and they're sitting on 9 now.
It's that would not be a bad
out day. Of the realm of possibility the Steelers could get 7 sacks.
It is not.
The second highest number on that list is 14, which was set in 2020.
I just would like to say Cam Hayward is going to wreck everything. I mean, this dude, I when you go back, back in the offseason, I did the interview catching up with Clint Bowling after he retired, him and Kelly, just talking about life after football and things. The name he always says when he's like, I'm just happy I'm not out there having to block Cam Hayward. And they said they were watching that Monday Night Football. It was the first Bengals game they were really able to watch, Bengals on Monday Night Football. I believe that was the Dalton Death game. And they just sat there and said, oh, God, Cam Hayward, never again do I have to do that. Thank God. He just keeps doing it, and there's just nobody like him. And I mean, there's people like him, but for the Bengals and for what he's been against them and how tough he is, it's just he just does it. And he hits them at a spot of weakness, and they got other guys. It just feels like keep Burrow healthy, get some positives out of this, and winning is possible. Certainly is possible, but I don't think they've got enough to do it just yet. All right, Jay. That'll wrap us up. Again, we'll have the walkout, of course, from Pittsburgh. Jay, hopefully, will have fully recovered from going to OU to visit his son. I'm sure you will.
Yes.
Don't go to any frat parties, okay?
He's in a frat, but they got suspended.
And I'm sure they've just shut down all social activity.
Yeah.
Again, Jay, good luck recovering. Don't do anything that you would have done when you were in college, please. So we'll have that from Pittsburgh. I think we're going to have a drive out walkout from Pittsburgh.
Yes. We're coming home together, so we can just do it right in the car.
In the car on the drive home after the game. And now I hope back in the day that used to be live from the Toyota Sienna studios, but I don't think we're going to be in the Toyota Sienna minivan this week.
No, it's on its last leg, so I'm renting a car.
No, that's fair.
I should rent a Sienna though.
If you can do it, I mean, drive what you're comfortable with, right?
Right.
When you have a choice, you always pick minivan.
Well, yeah, but now that my kids are grown, I can't wait for that Sienna to die. We're in the process of buying a new car right now. It's just not a good time to buy. So I think I've driven my last Sienna.
Yep. So if you see Jay driving his Toyota Sienna, go ahead and wreck into him. He'd be appreciative.
Yes, by all means.
By all means. Assuming you have insurance, please. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Enjoy the game on Sunday. And we will talk to you after it, breaking it all down from whatever car we end up getting, heading out back to Cincinnati. So have a good one, everybody. We'll talk to you next time.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.